2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome into the first ever Beat the Bookie podcast, DFS Army's own John Alicia. I just learned that that's the correct pronunciation of your name, and I am your host, season-long says, Alan Sislowski. What's up, John?
What's going on, man? Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So for those of you who are on Twitter, this is Statsational, and you know that he is DFS Army's one of our newest and greatest additions. He is running the Beat the Bookie section. And the purpose of this podcast is going to be, we're going to do a series of sports wagering strategies. And John, we're not going to go, hey, who are the locks? But this is going to be more of teaching people how to be a better sports wager.
Yeah. And you know, to that point, when you say locks, people watching this, especially in the Twitter world, are going to be real familiar with these, you know, Twitter touts giving you the lock of the week, the lock of the month, the lock of the year. They've got all sorts of wacky names. Be careful when you see those sort of things. There is no lock. I've actually got a good story about locks. If you want to hear it, how, and to prove that there are no locks.
Yeah, we're going to get to that whole section, and I do want to hear that story. I'm going to do a callback on that. But yeah, I mean, anyone who's selling you picks is a fraud, more or less. I mean, if someone really thought there was a locks, why would you give them out to anyone else? You would just keep them for yourself and liquidate all your assets and put all your money on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no such thing as a lock. But this, you know, when you have a sharp bettor or someone of that, they're advantage players, they call them. And those are guys who are finding an edge in the market, and it's a small edge. There's nobody out there winning 80% of their games against the spread. Or, you know, these are very small edges that we're taking advantage of. And what we're trying to do over at Beat the Bookie is just teach you how to be smarter about this. For most people, this is, you know, it's fun. They're sport fans, and having a little action on the games just makes it more fun. And, yeah. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate the public.
So this is the first in a series of podcasts that we're going to be doing throughout the whole year. But the first one, I just want to back up a second. John, talk to me a little bit. Tell the people, give us your backstory, your resume. How did you become a sports wagering plus EV player? Go back starting to, you know, as early as you want and tell the people.
I could go back pretty early. Back in the day, I grew up in Brooklyn. So back in the day, my dad, he would go to his bowling league in Brooklyn, and he would come home with these sheets, like the parlay sheets, which certainly anyone my age or older is familiar with these old parlay sheets, and they were just terrible bets. You'd get the worst lines, and there'd be, you know, if you had a game that was -7, you know, you'd get like +6 on one side and -7 on the other side, and you had to hit however many you played. But we used to have so much fun, you know, and you try to hit 10 games out of 10 games and win some awful payout.
How old were you during this?
I was probably, you know, 9-10 years old. So my dad would bring one home, and he'd be like, okay, you pick a bunch of games, I'll pick a bunch of games, we'll try to win these.
That was his system.
Yeah, there wasn't much of a system, you know. I mean, between enjoying the horses and going with my grandfather to the horses, you know, it was just always sort of in the blood.
Yeah.
And then I got pretty heavily involved in poker before poker was the thing. And a matter of fact, when I was in college, we couldn't get a poker game. I venture to guess now, in college, it's pretty easy to find yourself a poker game. Everyone's a poker expert these days. But back then, I couldn't even explain to the guys what Texas Hold'em was back in the mid-90s, early 90s. So anyway, it kind of moved on from there when I was in college. And of course, again, being the sports
Where did you go to school?
I was at Lehigh University. Mm-hmm. And I actually finished up. I was there for 2 years, and I finished up in the city. Had to come back home for some personal reasons. So I finished up in going to school in the city, but for the 2 years I was over at Lehigh.
So, John, when you say the city, that's such a New York thing. I mean, I know.
That's true. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, for those watching nationally, internationally, he's talking about New York City.
See, I am talking about New York City. Yes.
People say the city. When you're in the Northeast, they all know. But it's funny because now living down south, people, when I say that, they look at me cross-eyed. So I interrupted your story, John.
No, that's fine. So, but when I started over there, it was like, I was just used to, we played in the office pools, the NFL office pools every week, and then of course the NCAA pools. And so as soon as I started, football season starting when the first semester starts, and I'm walking around knocking on everyone's door on my freshman hall, and like, hey, $5 pool and everything. And people are looking at me like, who is this guy? Scared of the guy from Brooklyn. So, but it eventually worked out, and everyone, when we had a good time, and so I've been doing it for years and playing the poker and all that. I think it was a little ahead of the big poker boom. So I started, I never got out of it. Started working on Wall Street when I graduated, got into FX trading, currency trading world. And while I was working for the last company that I just left in New York, I started fiddling around about 8 or 9 years ago with building some models for the NFL, because the NFL was, that's kind of the king of sports betting, right? Everyone wants to bet the NFL. And I hit on something. I started posting, and I said, well, I think I have something good. I'm going to just post these games on this gambling forum and see how it goes.
That's what I was going to ask you. So back then it was more just message boards and things like that, right? It wasn't.
Yeah, it was a forum. Yeah. There was no, there might've been Twitter, but I certainly wasn't on Twitter at that point yet. Mm-hmm. So we started posting the games, and sure enough, week one, the picks go like 12-1 or something like that.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, it's a little, got lucky here. It's a little fluky. And I think maybe 9-3 week two, and it just was sort of like that. So I think after 5 weeks, and a significant amount of games, probably about 60-ish games, we've got over a 70% or close to a 70% win rate. And now, of course, the forums are getting like hopping, like, what's going on? This guy's crushing it.
The problem is you start thinking you have the gift of prophecy when you hit that early on.
Yeah. Yeah. But, little did I know on some of these gambling forums, I guess they're sort of in bed with the with some of these books. So they have their own touts, and I wasn't one of their touts. They didn't want me winning. I didn't realize that. I thought the whole purpose of these sites was to promote people who were winning and let people share ideas. So you got to be careful sometimes. That's not what they were about. They wound up frying my entire computer with a virus when I opened it. They had locked me from, I couldn't post anymore. And they said, and I said, well, why? I didn't do anything. All I've been doing is posting my games. And so I sent them an email. I said, is everything okay? Did I do anything? And when I opened up their email on their platform, it totally fried my laptop. Luckily, it was my laptop. I bring it to work, and my IT guy in the office says, this is probably the worst virus I've ever seen. He's like, someone really wanted to wipe you out and destroy whatever you had on here.
It's amazing because, I guess that's still better than a knock on the door.
But it freaks you out, when it happens. You feel like, oh my God, are they like, are they tracking me down? And then, but the flip side was, they really think I have something good here. They think I'm doing, and they want it destroyed and shut down. I mean, it sounds like a crazy story. It sounds like a movie, but.
No, it's amazing. Sometimes, like the FBI, you hear about these stories that they turn criminals into employees because, mm-hmm. They like, hey, how did this guy hack us? So you've actually, in a sense, you broke their code. I'm surprised they didn't get you to work for them. They just wanted you out of the picture, huh?
Yeah, it's really weird. You would have thought that. So, I bounced around, and people, and I was like, well, I don't, I'm not getting anything out of this. I was just doing it because I'm learning too at that point. I'm trying to learn from other people, and I was helping people, and I wasn't going to do anything anymore. And then, of course, there was an uproar. Like, everyone wanted these games. And so I started posting them on another site. Similar thing happened, not with that. And I said, well, I'm done with this. I'll go to Twitter. That's kind of when everyone was like, hey, go on Twitter. So I started posting games on Twitter, and it's all sort of evolved from there. And I've gotten to this point.
How did your name Statsational come about? Did someone give you that nickname?
That was me sitting in my office, and I don't know. And it was one of those things that came out in 5 minutes. If you think it's a really good name, it's like, then okay. It was like one of the great songs that was written in 5 minutes. If you think it's terrible, well, I only took 5 minutes to come up with it.
And that's a great analogy. You always hear about, like, you know, these epic rock and roll songs that were literally written while the guy was in the shower and he scribbled on some sort of like matchbook, you know? Yeah. No, I love Statsational. I think it's descriptive and it stands out, and marketing a name is unbelievable. And, all right. So that's what led you here. Now, what prompted you, you know, to leave Wall Street and really do this for a living? I mean, you know, I mean, at this point, when someone says, what do you do for a living? Do you tell them that you're a professional sports gambler?
I usually open it with, this is going to sound really weird.
So you're a little self-conscious about it.
I am, just because I think now the younger generation, they're more geared towards, like I said, you know, I started playing poker. And if I would have told somebody in the 90s, hey, I'm a professional poker player, like, they just didn't exist. Right. Unless you were like, you know, the type of people who were professional gamblers or poker players were a little bit seedy, right? Now we know there's all these super smart guys out there.
I mean, look at the guy in Jeopardy.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Brilliant, right?
Yeah. He said to Alex, I'm a professional sports gambler. And that was part of his allure. That actually drove TV ratings. They found out in post surveys that people were interested in him because of his profession and obviously his winning.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't watch the show all that often. And I was down here in Clearwater. I was at the minor league Philly game, and I was at the in the box, in the skybox. And someone, you know, the question always comes up, what do you do for a living? And I told him, and he said, have you been watching Jeopardy? The guy's a professional sports player. I said, no, that's phenomenal. I got to start watching. He was kind of in the early run of his unbelievable run on that show. So I said, yeah, you know, there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of sharp people out there doing this. And certainly when the DFS came about, even more people came out of the woodwork, right? So a lot of these really smart guys, and I've met a lot of them in the DFS world, going to some of these live finals and things like that. So yeah, the stigma has been taken away, and we're seeing that now with legalized sports betting coming all across the country. A lot of states are legalizing it. So I think, you know, if you're new to sports betting, this is the time to start to learn a little bit more about it, because it's probably going to be coming to the state you live in soon, if it hasn't already.
Yeah. So John Alicia is our James Holzhauser. I mean, he's been, you know, I'm going to humble brag for you a little bit. You are a little bit of a folk hero already in DFS Army Slack chats and all that. I mean, not only are you a hell of a nice guy, John, but the way you teach people how to become a better sports wager, that right off the bat, you said, hey, listen, here's my picks. I'll put them out there. But, you know, and the way you strategically select games has really been something that has been quite an asset to DFS Army. And the Beat the Bookie portion of DFS Army has seen a huge spike since you and your team have come over. So I guess what I really want to talk to you first is, even if you've been sports wagering for a while, it's always good to go back to the blocking and tackling, the basics of sports wagering. What would you tell somebody who's been seeing the commercials, who's been, you know, maybe making a wager here and there, they've been losing, you know, maybe of every six bets, they probably lose four, they lose five, maybe once in a while they hit something. What are the key basics, like the real stripped down 10,000 foot view? What are two or three things they should know before they get into it, invest their own money?
Well, I'll tell you what, the one thing I say, and it's the most boring thing, and I've posted videos on it, and it's like the least amount of views, but I'm gonna pound it again because it's so important, and that's your bankroll and risk management. And nobody wants to hear it because it's not sexy, because I'm not telling you how to win a game.
Explain that though. Start with bankroll, because even so, I'm an experienced sports bettor, okay? I'm not an expert by any means, but I feel like at this point, I've been doing it for 25 years. I have a little bit of edge. Talk to me, like, what is bankroll? I mean, I have to say, you know, I mean, does bankroll mean every dollar I own or every dollar I'm willing to risk?
Yeah, it's the money you are willing to risk, right? We don't want bankroll is not what your net worth is. Let's put it that way. It's what we're putting in. Let's kind of take it back a step. This, no matter how you're doing this, if it's casually or it's actually you want to be a professional, you need to have a bankroll set aside and treat it like a business, right? So if you treat this like a business and say, hey, I've got $500. And that's my $500 for the NFL season. That's fine, right? But what most people who actually, in actuality, may have $500 to lose, where it's not going to change their life and anything like that, they're probably betting, you know, $50 a game, because they're only looking at it on a per game basis, and they're saying, well, I could wager $50 a game. So that's like one. So the thing I say about bankroll management I'm very conservative, and I think the more the larger your bankroll is, probably the more conservative you might want to be. So I look at it as a 1 or 2% of my entire bankroll. I'm going to wager. We call them units. So if you aren't familiar, and I know a lot of people have come into the Slack chats and they've asked, you know, what exactly is a unit?
Right. And, I've heard that. I've heard 2 units, 3 units. So is that basically another word for unit? Would that be like percent?
Yeah. Well, that's how you should view it. But, you know, people view their unit size as what's your typical bet size. But what you should be doing is exactly what you said. And that should be a percentage of your bankroll. That's what a unit size should be. So if you maintain your unit size, that's one. Determine what your bankroll is. Then you can determine what your unit size is. And I always recommend a 1 to 2% of bankroll to be your unit size. So that's key. Now, if it's a small bankroll, if it's a $100 bankroll, you know, maybe you want to move it up to 5% and your minimum bet is $5. But you know, when you start to have a significant bankroll in the 4 and 5 figures, I would start to look at a more conservative 1 to 2%.
So, for example, like, how do you determine what your bankroll is? Like, say, let's say, okay, football season starting in a week, and do I say, hey, I don't want to lose more than $1,000 this football season? So is that basically how you do it? Like, you go in saying, okay, what's the most amount of money I'm willing to lose, and that becomes your bankroll?
Like, yeah, well, ideally, what I tell people is this should not be a number in your head. Like, okay, I could lose $1,000 this season. What I suggest is, let's say you're going to be an NFL bettor. Well, you know when the NFL starts in September. So all year long, you're going to put a couple of bucks away, whatever you have to do, and actually physically have that money, whether it's a separate account, whether it's on, if you have an online account, the money might be in that account that you don't touch. Whatever the case is, I always say have that money separated from your money that you use on a day-to-day basis. Don't ever be dipping into, you know, I can't pay the electric bill because I lost on a game this week. And it should never come to that. You should never have that much anxiety watching a game. And that's where people go wrong, because then it changes how you bet and who you bet on when you start to add all that emotion in. So what we're really doing is, one, trying to make this as safe for you as possible. And then two, you once you do that, you start to take a lot of the emotion out of betting. And I'm just a firm believer in not putting too much emotion into anything. Like when I traded, you know, when you start to feel either a necessity to make a trade or get out of a trade, or, you know, same thing with a bet, like, boy, it's Monday night. I have to make a bet. It's Monday night. I just lost over the weekend. And how am I going to get it back if I don't bet this Monday night game? But you have to get yourself out of that world. Either you like that game or you don't like that game. I need to bet every single game, especially when I'm losing, because I need to make the money back.
And I think that's a common mistake that most people make, self-included. And I think that's how you have to go through that sometimes in order to see that that's the wrong thing. I mean, I've been in that situation where, oh my God, I lost 3 in a row. I'm just going to take what I thought was a 50-50 call on. So, I mean, the spread makes it 50-50, right, John? So I just throw a dart, and of course you lose that one too.
I used to sit in my classroom in college. I'd sit in the, and it would be, you know, on a Monday, have a bad Sunday, and sit there, and you've got basically, I could take either side of the game or the total. And I would just sit there and just write, like, I don't know, why do I like this team? Maybe I like the under. I mean, it would be hours of this only because I was trying to get out of a $200 hole that I just didn't want to pay the $200, because I'm like, I don't want to lose, you know, I'm in college. Right. I can't afford to lose $200. You know, so if I was properly managing my money and my bet sizes back then, those same couple of losses that I had on Sunday just wouldn't have been that big a deal. And I just would have, you know, put a normal bet in maybe on Monday if that bet at all.
So live the fight another day.
That's right.
Okay.
The one thing I say, businesses, this, treat it like a business. And the number one rule in business is to stay in business, not make a profit. It's to stay in business, because if you don't stay in business, you then no longer can make a profit, right? So always be able to keep the doors open, and hopefully in the future, we'll be able to make some money. You'll get smarter and smarter as you go. But if you get tapped out in 2 weeks, you'll never bet again. And it's all pointless. So keep yourself in business. Be smart.
All right. Well, if you're, you know, most guys I feel like are like me. They like to have a couple drinks, maybe put a bet on a game, sit back, kick your feet up and watch. Talk about how dangerous that could be and a slippery slope. Like, we want everyone to have a good time. You know, you go to the sports book nowadays you could just do it right from your own computer. But it's almost as dangerous as drinking and driving. I mean, obviously I'm being figurative, not literal. But talk about, like, clear mind, when even if you're just doing this for entertainment.
That's right. I mean, again, though, if you keep yourself, this is all preparedness. It's like being a quarterback, right? So you go into a game with a game plan, and then when all that fast action is happening, it looks slower because you have the game plan. You knew what they were what the defense was going to do. So if you go in with the game plan, like I don't get myself in those situations where I like to go out and drink and I like to go out and watch the games, but I'm still programmed now that I don't feel the impulse to just bet a game out of the blue or put more on a game than I really should be. So that's, I think it's more, you know, getting yourself in that mind frame. It all goes back to, for me, like I said, the bankroll management and risk management, and I call it portfolio management, just because of the world I come from. So really, getting rid of the feeling that you must bet every single game on the board. When you become sharp and smart at this, you're only looking for plays that are an advantage, not just necessarily because you're the action junkie. There's plenty of action out there.
And for those of you who are watching who are experienced sports bettors and you're saying, hey, you know what? I know all this already. This is episode one of the Beat the Bookie podcast. We're just doing, like I said, we're not getting too granular. It's just the overview. We're going to get into all of the nuances and the strategies. And again, this is going to be one of my favorite podcasts of the week. We're doing about five or six of them now. And if you get as excited about sports numbers as both John and I do, then this is definitely the podcast for you. John, what we'll do is let's give them one or two more quick basic strategies. And then in future episodes, like I said, we're going to talk about best strategies for football. We're going to talk about best strategies for basketball, mixed martial arts. And even we have a horse racing owner that's going to come on, and I'm excited to watch the dialogue between you and the horse racing owner. And they're going to talk about how the gambling lines affect them as well. So before we get out of here today, tell me a little bit about just some other basic strategies that are important for both experienced gamblers and also for the new person looking to get into this.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to talking to this person I'm here about with the horses. So that's sort of my, right? So the horse world, when I go into play horses, that's more recreational for me. So that's sort of, that's me being,
I should have.
What a lot of you watching maybe sports bettors are. So that's
my surprise to you. We're going to have an owner of a thoroughbred come on.
That's awesome.
And yeah. So we'll talk more about that in the weeks to come.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, actually, you know, thinking about it from that point of view, I think, people jump in and they don't fully understand everything, exactly what the bets are. I think the VIG is another thing that people don't necessarily understand when they're betting, and they don't take into account, the spread is 3, but it's minus 120, and they don't necessarily take into account what that means and understanding the numbers. I'm just I'm big proponent of numbers. Like if I can't quantify something, I have a hard time, being able to risk any money on it. So, you know, I'll be asked my opinion all the time. And when I get when someone asks my opinion, I'm right away with the pen and paper or on the computer going, well, let me see, because I need to see it. I can have an opinion, but then I need to see it on paper. Is this a good bet?
And then, you know what, you actually hit on something. And I think that's we're going to pull it back even further. So, you know, most of the questions that I get, and, you know, I get some spillover questions that, you know, I direct everyone to go to the Beat the Bookie tab in the Slack chat if you're a DFS Army premium member. But they, you know, as basic questions as is my, just use the number 120, is minus 120 or plus 120? Which one's the underdog? Is there a quick, easy way that someone can remember which side is the favorite and what that actually means? Like if you have two teams playing and one of them's a minus 120, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, what that means is, so if it's a minus 120, if it's straight money line, minus 120, and you'll see this typically in hockey or baseball, where you have money lines are the more traditional type of bet. The minus money is the favorite. So what that generally means, or what it does mean, minus 120 is you're betting 120 to win $100. So they're the favorite. And then if it's a plus money, you're of course betting 100 to win whatever that plus dollar figure is. So they're the underdog in that contest. But you could also see it with spread betting, and we've talked about it before. And a lot of times it's on these key numbers, and these are all maybe some deeper topics. But 3 would be a very key number in the NFL, just because the way the scoring goes and games land on 3. But you'll see bookies don't want to move the game off of that number, and they'll instead move what's called the money line or the juice. and they'll juice a game to one side or the other. And those are things that you have to kind of understand. Why are they juicing it? You know, can I shop around to other books? Is there a chance here that the game's going to move in the direction of the dog or the direction of the favorite based on the juice? And should I wait? You know, sharp bettors, the probably the most important thing sharp bettors do is they get a good line on games. You know, if you could get, I believe it's if you, in the NFL, if you can beat the closing number by a point, you can just basically pick blindly and you will be profitable.
Okay. So
if you can get a point better, think about
that. Yeah, and there's so many, you know, it's funny. My juices get flowing when you talk about this stuff because these are the parts of it that I really like. It's not even so much as the wagering themselves, but it's the process. It's the nuance. And if you're listening and you're a brand new gambler, you're a brand new sports wager, you have interest in it, I recommend watching all of these podcasts before you even jump into it. Just in this short episode alone, John's given you a couple good tips about of course, the cautions, but also just actionable things. And we're going to get, if some of these terms that he's talking about are lost on you a little bit, we're going to get into them. And if some of these terms are old hat to you and you're like, hey, I'm ready for the next level stuff, keep watching. We're going to have more stuff like that as well. John, anything else? Again, we're going to close out this episode. We're going to do these in about 20, 30 minute clips. And we're going to try to do these at least once a week. And as football season ends and both of us have a little bit more time, we might get into a couple more of these. Is there anything that you would talk to him that's definite cautions or stay away is for new gamblers?
Don't get involved in sports that you don't necessarily understand right away.
Okay.
You know, that I would say, because I've got some good stories and we'll probably get into some of my stories because you do it long enough and I want everyone to learn from the stupid things that I may have done when I was, you know, in my 20s. With gambling,
those are my favorite kind of stories.
I've got plenty of them, and you know, a lot, and a lot of it has to do with just betting on stuff that you don't know, just for the sake of betting on it. So understand the game, understand every aspect of the bet, not just the game. Like I said, know what the juice is. Understand what percentage do I need to pick right here in order to cover this juice and be profitable. All these things, I know guys who bet for 25 years and don't fully understand this because they still send me text guys I've known growing up. They'll send me text messages where I'm like, wow, you've been doing this forever. How do you not, you know, they're not professionals at it, but I'm like, how do you not know this? So really, right. To me,
well, that's understand it fully. That's my point is that, and if the term juice or vig is lost on you, basically, and just tell me if I'm on point here, that's the percentage that you have to pay to the house just to use their service. And you only pay that juice or vig if you lose. If you win, you don't have to pay it. So on a $100 bet, if you lose, you actually, in most places, pay a 10%, let's call it cover charge or juice or vig. So you'd lose $110. Where if you win, you just win your $100. So beware of the juice, because the more you lose, the more bets you have to win. That's why John was talking about you have to win more than 50% of your bets. Someone said, hey, if I win 50.1% of my bets, aren't I profitable? And the answer to that one, John, is obviously what?
It is no, unless right. You're getting bets at even money, which are pretty rare to find.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, we're going to get into all these juicy stories on future episodes. That's why I know. And I'm dying to hear them, too. I'm sure you are if you're watching.
I'm telling you, on the next one, we're going to talk about this whole thing about locks. I told you about the locks. I'll tease it. It's a really good story. So,
yeah. And you know what's funny is every story, gambling story starts the same way. I was up and then I lost it all.
And this one does as well. So,
yeah,
so
that's what I'm saying. I already know that from personal experience and I know it from hearing people. So. Tune in next week. We're going to do these on Saturdays where we can. And, you know, we're going to figure out a schedule that works. You know, these Beat the Bookie and John's stories, which, you know, he's told me a couple off air. And these, I know he's saving for on air. These are amazing. And he's a great storyteller. John Alicia, tell us quickly where they can find you on Twitter and on DFS Army.
Yeah, just Statsational on Twitter. Feel free to hit me up over there. And then if you join Beat the Bookie, we've got the Slack chats there, and I'm always available. You know, if I'm not sitting at my desk, I've got the phone with me. So feel free to ask me a question or the other coaches. We've got great coaches in there. They do all different sports, and everyone's really helpful. And we're all just trying to bring everyone up together. So I think if you get in here now, you know, everyone's going to benefit from it and get smarter and sharper.
Cool. And then also give them your promo code if they want to sign up and use your promo code to get 20% off their first month.
It is Statsational. So we made it really easy. Statsational is my promo code. I believe you get 20% off on that. if you sign up over at Beat the Bookie. So get over to dfsarmy.com, and there's a Beat the Bookie. I think it's over on the upper right-hand side. You'll see VIP, Beat the Bookie, something like that. You can sign up and, use StatSational as the code.
Cool. All right. Tune in next time to see us for John for StatSational. I am Season Long Says, and gamble responsibly, have fun, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, guys. Thanks.